even if it only means performing the Eid prayer.
Reviving the spirit of Eid is an attempt by the people of Gaza to momentarily escape the Israeli resumption of the genocide and the grave humanitarian crisis caused by the ongoing blockade. However, the Israeli occupation insists on staining this day in particular with bloodshed and massacres.
I only came to the Eid prayer to fulfill a religious duty. However, there is no joy or happiness for us. As you can see, the mosque is destroyed, but despite that, they cannot erase our faith from our hearts, and we must pray.
In the 24 hours leading up to the Eid, the Israeli massacre intensified, leaving at least 50 Palestinians killed, the majority of whom were young children playing close to the tents while dressed in minimally available Eid clothing.
This third Eid since the beginning of the genocide concludes with the sounds of the takbirs being mingled with the explosions of the artillery shells falling on the tents and the homes of the people, killing the children and burying their laughter under the rubble of their homes, and making this trip even a wider slaughterhouse. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now for our guests. Joining us is Sarah Flounders from the International Action Center out of New York. And Christopher Helali, researcher and political analyst, joining us out of Verchar, Vermont, U.S. as well. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Ms. Flounders, we'll start with you. Welcome to our Spotlight program. Pleasure to have you, ma'am. 80 people have been killed in the past 48 hours in Gaza through Israeli attacks, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, raising the number, overall number, since March 18th, when Israel completely put an end to its participation in the Gaza ceasefire, to now 1,001 in less than 2 weeks. Your opening thoughts, please, on this year's Eid Fitr massacre in Gaza by the Zionist entity.
Well, it is horrific. There's no other way to say it. And it is deliberate. And the Zionists keep careful track of every celebration and holiday and religious significance and how to bring insult to it, how to use it to grind down the Palestinian people. Instead, they become more steadfast, stronger in their determination. But it is a real and systematic and continuing effort to insult the resistance and to try to break the resistance. It is totally backed by the U.S. in full support, knowing exactly what Ramadan means and especially what Eid al-Fitr means throughout all of the Muslim world. And so to make insult, to make massacres on this day is very, very intentional. And I think the condemnations around the world are very important, but they don't end the crimes because, as I say, there's total U.S. support for these crimes, and they even help to publicize it because they're trying to send a message to the whole world that there's no crime they won't commit, no matter how disgusting or horrific.
Thank you, ma'am. And Christopher Helali, welcome to the conversation there, bud. Good to have you. Christopher, the occupation could have very well stuck to the January 19th Gaza ceasefire agreement, which we should add Hamas completely respected throughout the first phase, and the entity, the occupation, never allowed it to reach a second phase. Your initial thoughts, please, on how this all could have been prevented, the Ramadan and Eid al-Fitr bloodshed in Gaza.
Well, first of all, Eid Mubarak to all of your listeners and to everyone in our Islamic community. Of course, these massacres are ongoing because, as rightfully pointed out by Sarah Flanders, the Zionists and their allies do not care about these holidays in terms of moments of celebration and unity, but to use them rather as days of bloodshed. And so we've seen the bloodshed in Gaza on these supposed to be most holy days, celebratory days at the end of the month of fasting. And we've also seen bloodshed in Yemen and Lebanon, where bombing has resumed by the Zionists and their allies. So, of course, this bloodshed could have totally been prevented had the Zionists and their allies in the West been committed to peace. But they're not committed to peace. They are committed to a path of war. They're committed to a path of genocide. They're committed to a path of domination in the region. And so what prospects of peace do we have if they are so committed to destroying any resistance to their access of domination on the region? That's the real concern, is how to overcome their stranglehold. And the only way to do that is through resistance. But as you can see, even resistance in words, even resistance, religious resistance, is met with brutal and barbaric acts such as the Zionists have committed in Gaza in recent days.
And Ms. Flounders, the way these the Eid massacres have unfolded, practically all civilians, many children, you see them wearing their deceased, their corpses draped in their Eid celebratory clothes. They're very extremely disheartening to see these images, and you know, lives poignantly cut short, ma'am. And to your point, what is achieved from this deliberate, systematic onslaught this level of barbarism on these kind of special holidays?
Well, I think what's shown, what's exposed to the whole world, and what was shown on that signal chat of the war makers planning their bombing of Yemen is just how absolutely ruthless they are, and how much these attacks are intended to strike the most defenseless in order to send a message of ruthlessness. There's no other message that they want to send. Clearly they know that there's no way to respond to such crimes, and particularly the striking of children. I do find in all of this the images you just showed of parents, even in the midst of rubble, they're pushing their children on swings. They're doing everything they can to help to bring joy when there is no joy, but to share with their children real traditions, the meaning of this day. And that determination does give confidence to the world of just how steadfast the Palestinians are and how steadfast the entire axis of resistance is. So while the U.S. and the Zionists may be intending one message, the message that's absorbed by the people of the whole world, by people of conscience everywhere, is an entirely different message, that it takes continued determination to survive this level of brutality. And that's a very important message, because they want to say there's nothing we won't do unless you bow down and accept complete ruin. And clearly the Palestinians are saying, as Chris very rightfully saying, they refuse. They refuse, and that is the message I think we need to draw to continue every effort. And just thinking of the past days and the coming days, there's one demonstration, one rally after another here on Al-Quds Day on Friday, who are out in force, and on Land Day, you know, on Sunday, and on every one of these days, there is actions, there's protests, there's There's arrests. There's young students facing deportation on no grounds except that they spoke out. So I think our message needs to, in every way, reflect the determination we see and to stand wholeheartedly with Palestine and with resistance during this entire period and into the future.
And Christopher, imagine bombing and killing an entire family. We saw it last night, 9 people of a single family killed by an Israeli bomb. Imagine that happening not just on a holiday or under any circumstance in the States. If somehow the enemy bombs on Thanksgiving Day a family or Christmas Day, a family sitting at their dinner table in Vermont where you're at or in New York. Imagine the kind of global pushback. And Ms. Sarah Flounders alluded to it earlier, that global condemnation is extremely important. Why are women and children's lives in Gaza not getting the coverage or the appeal or the uniform blanket condemnation that they deserve? Are their lives any less important for world leaders? Why are they not speaking up on this on these atrocities?
Regrettably, for the West, the lives and the blood of Palestinians is cheap. It's cheaper than the lives of those in the West. And that has been the case for many, many decades. In fact, some would say it's been the case since the beginning of this imperialist and colonialist onslaught on the region. And so when you see entire families wiped out, not only in these brutal massacres, these barbaric massacres now, but throughout the course of this genocide, we've seen entire families completely erased from history that have been there for millennia, and they're gone. And when you see that, and you see that there is limited outcry in the West, because, of course, it's the West that has imposed this brutality upon the people of the region. It is the West that supports the Zionist entity that created it to begin with and imposes its will upon the Palestinian people who are the natives of that land. When you see all of this happening, you understand that for the West, there is no conscience. There is no moral or ethical values that are deep-rooted within them. There is only the value of dominance, the value of supremacy, and the value of conquest. So when all of that is added together, clearly it becomes apparent that they do not care about these Palestinian families, whether women or children, as you were rightly saying, in their festive attire for this most holy of celebrations. But what ends up happening is that their lives are devalued. They are equated with quote-unquote terrorism and things like that, when they are merely innocent children, 4, 5, 6 years old, the age of some of my children. And so when you see that, it exposes the barbarity of the West. It exposes the fact that it has no leg to stand on. It has no more justification to speak about human rights. It actually never did, because it itself is the greatest purveyor of violence and violations of human rights around the world. So that is why we see the press in the global South speaking so much about what's happening in Gaza, speaking truth to power, especially the power of the global North. But, of course, we don't see it as much in the West, because the West, of course, has its agenda and is also dominated by very powerful interests that continue to try to highlight the Zionist claims and the Zionist perspective, but not the Palestinians' claims and perspective and the fact that they are the ones suffering under this brutality since October the 7th.
And, Sarah Flounders, I also want to come back to you, because you initially mentioned the importance of strong global condemnation. We heard it earlier today in a speech by leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He said that global unity is very important right now to push back against the Zionist onslaught and massacres against Palestinians, but we have yet to see it. And I just want to ask you, I mean, Israel has, I mean, isolated and ostracized over the past 18 months than it's been. Possibly since its establishment, but not on the level, ma'am, that is warranted by this level of death and destruction and genocide in Gaza. Why?
A lot of it is the domination, the control of the huge corporate media that's owned by the billionaires. And I think we need to find new targets, new ways of explaining this reality. Just to give one example, tomorrow here in New York, we're having a march on Billionaire Row. It's the wealthiest zip code in the U.S. today, where really the multi-billionaires live. And it's a march for Gaza, saying, you know, that Gaza is for the Palestinians, not for the billionaires. That's what Trump proposed. Make it a resort. Just drive the people out. We need to respond to that. We need to respond again and again with ways of explaining and targeting who's responsible for these unspeakable crimes. Because solidarity really is the one weapon we have. Human consciousness and increasingly standing together in unity. This becomes very powerful, and it can't be pushed back as people understand it. Very important, the statements about the world coming together, because mm-hmm. that's what's happening. These actions are acts of total desperation. The Zionists, and also U.S. imperialism, frankly, is frantic that they can't stop this level of just sheer human resistance and will. So from here, I think we need to find new ways of expressing this, of encouraging those who are facing real repression right here now to stand firm. And as I say, we're going to do a march on Billionaire Row for Gaza, because that's who they want to steal everything from. And we need to answer that in real and living ways.
And good luck with that, Ms. Flounders. And Christopher, it seems throughout the years that the occupation has been extra provocative and aggressive when it comes to holy Islamic traditions and occasions and even sacred sanctities. We've seen every year through the holy fasting month of Ramadan, they've attacked worshipers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound or prevented them access to get into the compound. We've seen, on the flip side of that, settlers allowed into the compound to insult, to engage in inflammatory actions toward Palestinians there. To Sarah Flounder's point earlier, what is the point of the systematic policy of the Israelis to take these sacred times for the Muslims, and it's not just Muslims, I should add, and I'll bring that up later too, but sanctities, holy sanctities of the Palestinians, and try to degrade them on these occasions?
Well, of course, it is policy of the Zionist entity there to not only target Muslim holy sites and holy days and days of prayer and fasting, but also Christian sites. And we've seen this, that Palestinian Christians and Muslims are united in their oppression by the Zionist entity. We've seen it with various churches in Al-Quds, in Jerusalem, belonging to Armenians and other Palestinian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox Christians. And we've seen the level of depravity and escalations by not only the Zionist regime, but by settler, you know, far-right settler groups that are now instilling fear in local sheikhs, in Islamic leaders, in the worshipful and the faithful, and also with priests and different other communities in the region. So this is done to not only target these communities, but to humiliate them and to basically emphasize that they are not welcome in the land that they have known as home for millennia, that they are not welcome anymore, and that this is part of the ongoing supremacy of the Zionists, and that this land is only for one group of people and for nobody else. And it's meant as a humiliation not only for the people of the locales, of the region, but for the wider Islamic world, for the wider world of Christians as well, who are also, especially Orthodox Christians, who are facing this type of repression within the Zionist-controlled areas. So that's a big cause for concern, because it affects the religious sentiments of many people, and it shows the gross violations of human rights and human dignity of people to worship freely, to go to their places of worship in peace, and to protect those places of worship from the encroachments of these groups that seek to not only stop the prayers there, but in the case of the Al-Aqsa compound, to take it over, to destroy it, and to rebuild the Third Temple for a very fringe far-right group that has grown in dominance in the Zionist entity.
Mm. And Ms. Sarah Flounders, I'd like to also end our conversation with just that this targeting of religious occasions and sanctities is not exclusive to Muslims. The discrimination, the disrespect. We saw Christmas We saw settlers walking by, and the images were everywhere online, if you remember, settlers walking by the entrance and the walls of a church there in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, old city, spitting on the wall, on the entrance. And then when the father came out, Father Nicodemus Schnabel, he was about to engage with a reporter when he was accosted by two settlers who insulted him, spit on him, and kicked him. Now, it may be shocking, these things happen, and I'm sure they happen everywhere, but we never see people with this kind of mindset receive endless weapons and political cover to remain this backwards and this repulsive anywhere on the planet, do we?
No, there's almost, it's hard to imagine anything that would match this level of actual fascist training in the IDF forces. They're really trained in the most provocative, disgusting, offensive, racist, abusive ways. Trained to target children, trained to target religious symbols. Now, here's the real contradiction, even here in the US today, and that is every politician elected to office will back up this war, Republican or Democrat. People thought, oh, Biden wasn't doing enough. They had some expectation it would be better with Trump. Huh. The whole government system is totally aligned with imperialist war. And yet, in every poll, the majority of the population here in the U.S. is sympathetic to Palestine. But of course, their voices aren't heard, don't count. And the problems are becoming so great here that it attempts to push away any awareness of the world. And yet, that's got to be our continuing and deep concern. So these contradictions will come back and haunt the U.S. empire. They will, because its lessons are being learned even by the population here as their life difficulties increase. Who are our friends? Who are our allies? And where we have to stand against this government that on every level is criminal and stealing the resources right from here to pay for more and more war and humiliation. I think we have to make those links every single day in every message that we put out. Who benefits, which is the billionaires and the war makers, and who pays for these crimes. So saying no in organized and militant ways, I think, has to be on our agenda going forward, because the international organizations, beyond issuing statements, aren't doing much. And so there's a greater responsibility right here to answer to these attacks.
All right, very well. I want to thank the both of you for joining us on our Spotlight program. Stay safe to the both of you. Appreciate having you both on. Ms. Sarah Flounders there from the International Action Center joining us out of New York, and Christopher Hilali, researcher and political analyst from Verchères, Vermont. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. This is To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. It's great to have all of you here, and today we want to talk about a character who not only influenced Muslims across the world, but influenced many non-Muslims as well. This great personality is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him. Imam Ali alayhi salam treated all human beings to be equal in the matter of rights and responsibilities, and he did not fix any limit in this behalf of equality among all human beings. And if he did fix any such limits, it was fixed keeping in mind the interests of the public in general, the people. And when we study the character of Imam Ali, we clearly see that he did not violate this freedom, the freedom of the people, the freedom of the public, the freedom in any of his laws, orders, rules, or regulations, and he always kept the public welfare in his view, in all his actions. He dealt equal treatment to both his friends and his foes. Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we're speaking about this beautiful, divine, universal persona of His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib alayhi salam. His Eminence shows in his behavior something that is really interesting. We find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, when it came to some individuals, it seems like he didn't completely cut them off when it came to a sort of falling out in this relationship. So Imam Ali alayhi salam, there are certain individuals that, yes, he did end up opposing eventually, but it seems like he didn't cut off the relations completely. So perhaps we can say that Zubayr ibn Awam is one of these individuals. Zubayr, of course, was an individual who was very close to the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. He was a staunch supporter and follower of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. He was a very good and close friend of Imam Ali alayhi salam. But there was a falling out, and eventually Zubayr, he went and joined the enemy ranks in the Battle of the Camel, the Battle of Jamal. But at the end, we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam invited Zubayr to speak to him. And after Imam Ali alayhi salam spoke to him, Zubayr turned back from his superficial enmity with Imam Ali alayhi salam. At least he did not continue in the war. Here we find that this is an individual who was a close friend. There was a falling out because of Zubayr. And despite that falling out, Imam Ali alayhi salam didn't completely cut off his relations 100% with that individual, because he invited him to speak in the Battle of Jamal. And so it's interesting that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he speaks about this as well in other places, namely in his will to Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam, the second divinely appointed Imam and the son of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And so Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says that, you know, that for some reason, if you intend to cut off yourself from a friend, that you should leave some scope for that friend on your own side, so that if something happens one day and that friendship is to happen again, that you are able to be friends again. You know, sometimes we have a falling out with our friends, and it's to a point where we start to hate one another, we start to slander one another, we start to say bad things about one another, we do things to one another which are bad things, right? And that friendship becomes such that it can never be repaired again. And here Imam Ali alayhi salam, via his actions, via his words, via his persona, has taught us that, listen, you know, if there is a falling out, don't take it to such an extreme where if that individual wanted to be your friend one day or the other, that you could never be friends with them. Or if this individual was your friend and there was a falling out, and for some reason, you know, for example, you see them on the street, that you don't even want to look at them ever again. And so here, Imam Ali alayhi salam, he very beautifully tells us that, listen, if you have a friend and there is a falling out, keep some room in there if that friendship is to continue one day later on. A very profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. This moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Aminullah along with its English translations. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma fastajib du'ayi waqbal thanayi wajma' bayni wa bayna awliyayi bihaqq Muhammad.
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan, and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
Islam in its fullest motion in the Quran, that Imam Ali alayhi salam, how did he reduce the casualty? By the way, 20,000 people were killed in that battle. That's a lot of lives, relatively speaking. Then, today we have 7 billion people. Then we didn't even have a billion. Don't forget that. So, there was a lot of death, 20,000. But Imam wants to cut the casualty. He says to one of his soldiers, he says to Malik Ashtar, I think, and says, go to that camel and cut the legs of that camel, for it's that camel that's keeping the spirit alive. And the soldiers attack the camel, and they cut the legs of the camel, and the camel falls. She was still in the cage. She falls with the cage, unhurt. And the battle stops. Because the enemy realized, oops, our flag is gone, the morale died, and Imam Ali saves the day. So when he takes this wife, and tells her, pack up, let's go back to Medina. How does he do it with dignity, brothers and sisters? Not with taunting and cursing and bad names and throwing rocks at such people. No. We have to obey Imam Ali alayhi salam's sunnah in the sense that he is the reflection of the Holy Prophet. His transactions are a command upon us by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Imam does not taunt her, does not curse her, does not damn her in public. He sends her brother, Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, and says, go and talk to your sister that she should now pack up and let's go back to Medina, for you have been commanded by Allah in the Quran, وَقَرْنَا فِي بُيُوتِكُنَّ, remain in your houses, O wives of the Prophet. She refuses. Then Imam Hassan goes, and Imam Hassan tells her something that she quickly packs up and goes back. I won't discuss that tonight. There was something Imam Ali alayhi salam had in his hand as a trump card. They all knew about it, and they said that trump card was given to him by the Prophet. And if Imam uses it, many, many are things they wouldn't like. And Imam threatens, says, I will use it. She quickly packs up and goes back. And dignified, Imam never does anything else. Like, Wallah yuhibbul muqsitin. Allah loves the peacemakers. Tonight we commemorate the shahada of Imam Ali alayhi salam on these grounds. On the grounds of hikmah, on the grounds of justice. That while he is the Khalifa, When somebody, a Christian man, takes his shield, Imam doesn't taunt him and says, I am the Khalifa, you have stolen my shield, give it back to me and I will behead you. No, he goes into court and the judge addresses the Christian man by his first name, and then he calls Imam Ali by his title, higher status. And Imam is annoyed, and the judge says, you're already annoyed. He said, how dare you have given me a higher status before you have passed the judgment, before you have heard the arguments, how did you confer upon me greater status? Will you find just people like this in the world today? That the minute we get a little authority, we want to abuse it. You think Imam Ali alayhi salam can be compared on this earth like this? That's why Allah says, anfusana wa anfusakum. That when he goes to the grave, when he goes to the masjid and he becomes shaheed, that stroke should strike our hearts that I need this man as my role model. For if I'm ever going to come to its perfection, to the love of the Prophet, because he is my reflector of the Prophet. There's a Prophet said, وَالشَّمْسِ وَالضُّحَاهَا وَالْقَمَرِ إِذَا تَلَاهَا. By the sun and its brilliance and the moon which follows it. He says, I am that sun, and the moon that follows me is Ali ibn Abi Talib and the remaining 11 imams who will reflect me when I am not there. صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد. I end this tonight. My brothers and sisters, I want to read a dua. But before I read this dua, tonight is one of the nights of Qadr. Allah has blessed our blessed Imam Ali alayhi salam to be born in the Kaaba, to die in the sense of the stroke that killed him in a masjid. What an honor. What a personality. I've had personalities who say when they go to his haram, there's an energy there that's second to none other than the Prophet's, really. Tonight we must reflect on him not only as a personality, but as a person to say, what can I do to bring unity in my community? What can I do to be a good father? What can I do to be a good brother and a sister? Allah says, maintain unity. I'll give you a quick story before I end. When Imam Ali alayhi salam's khilafah was taken, a man of the Jewish faith comes to him and says to him that, you see, the Prophet just died and you guys are already disputing about the authority. So he starts taunting Imam Ali. Now what could Imam Ali alayhi salam done? If he was not a wise man, he would have taken advantage of that and said, yeah, you know, these guys have done an injustice to me, because we're all so willing to complain to anybody when our rights are taken.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, To My Brother. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A very bleak and somber day in Gaza, marking the start of Eid al-Fitr. The scenes here in the central part of the Gaza Strip are not the same and the usual ones. Empty streets, closed shops, and grieving families everywhere. And all that reverberated through is just the echoes of the strikes and artillery shells all around the Strip. Nonetheless, people wore new clothes and adorned their despair-filled streets, holding mere demonstrations of delight and steadfastness, and hoping that their suffering will know a very permanent end.
I hope the war will end, and we will spend the Eid as all other people. I wish to go to swings and play, not to be trapped and suffer like this. I was happy here with this initiative. We had some entertaining activities that brought us happiness. I'll also go to my aunt's home like others.
Despite the endlessly lingering consequences of Israeli genocide in Gaza and the unbearable trauma people have been subjected to during the last 17 months, the Eid comes at a time of grief and unending trauma. The children here in Deir al-Balah, who are internally displaced from their homes, have finally found out a glimmer of peace and joy to vent their pain, and their hope and resilience have never changed. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Central Gaza, Occupied Palestine.
Controversial remarks by the Israeli envoy have sparked outrage among the Palestinian Solidarity Community in Austria. Addressing members of the Jewish community on March 20, Ambassador David Roed is heard saying there should be a death sentence for 16-year-old teenagers in Gaza, and if Europe invests in rebuilding Gaza, Israel will have to destroy it the next time. Palestine Solidarity activists launched a petition to the Austrian government calling for the expulsion of the diplomat.
In the video, he called for the death penalty for minors in Gaza and emphasized that Israel will continue to destroy Gaza. So he not only defended Israel's genocidal strategy, but even endorsed it. This is unacceptable for an international representative, and therefore he must be recalled.
The remarks have been heavily condemned by Jewish anti-Zionist activists in Austria who have recently launched the Vienna Jewish Anti-Zionist Declaration to strengthen Jewish pro-Palestinian voices in Europe. They criticized the close relationship between the Austrian Prime Minister Christian Stocker and the Israeli ambassador.
There is obviously a very close contact between Stocker and the Israeli embassy in a time where there is a genocide in Gaza, which is unacceptable for us. As Jewish anti-Zionist initiatives, we condemn this strongly, and we will continue to pressure our government to stop all ties with Israel.
Some lawyers and solicitors prepared legal steps in response to the comments made by Roed and those in attendance.
From a legal perspective, it's difficult to do anything because the ambassador is immune. The immunity would have to be lifted to prosecute him, and the government won't do that. The real scandal, however, is that the remarks aren't even being investigated by police.
While there is strong condemnation in the international media, Austrian journalists have been silent about the video.
Activists are outraged over the continued alliance between the genocidal regime in Israel and the Austrian government. In a balanced act of disrespect to the Palestinian community, no Palestinian representatives were invited to the annual iftar hosted in the city hall by the mayor of Vienna last Thursday. While no Palestinian representatives were invited, Israeli representatives attended the event and were seated in the first row. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
The Constitutional Declaration was expected to lay the foundation for a democratic transition that represents all Syrians. Instead, it centralized power in the hands of Jolani, granting him absolute control over government appointments, including ministers, third of the parliament, and a committee that will appoint the rest, while restricting any oversight on his authority.
The declaration contradicts the aspirations of Syrians for democracy, political pluralism, and peaceful power transition. Instead of allowing the people to elect their leaders, it strips them of that right. Even the parliament can neither grant confidence to the government nor hold it accountable.
Critics argue that the declaration lacks true democratic foundations, concentrating authority in a single leader rather than ensuring fair representation for all components of Syrian society. The disappointment appeared in the small number of people celebrating the anniversary of the Syrian revolution, which did not exceed a few hundred.
Unfortunately, the Constitutional Declaration leans away from democracy, placing excessive power in the hands of the president and excluding genuine participation. Worse, it addresses transitional justice selectively, shifting all blame to one side instead of ensuring accountability for all parties.
Beyond legal concerns, recent events on the Syrian coast have raised serious fears about the country's future. Armed factions linked to the new regime have been accused of grave human rights violations, including mass killings, acts that some experts warn may amount to crimes of genocide.
What happened in the Syrian coastal region raises serious concerns about the future and the potential for further oppression. While I hope for a solution that satisfies all Syrians, the current situation leaves many in fear of what's to come.
As Syrians grapple with a deepening crisis, the Constitutional Declaration has only added to political discontent and growing fears about the country's future. With power concentrated at the top and violence escalating, hopes for democracy seem more distant than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
In his annual meeting with government officials and foreign ambassadors on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, Iran's leader has called this religious celebration a shared practice that can help unite Muslim nations and as a result offer them protection against the enemy's aggression, such as the ongoing genocide in Gaza. An example of using people's support in a geographically strategic location to unite with the oppressed is Yemen, a nation that has successfully imposed maritime restrictions on the Israeli regime for its genocidal war on Gaza.
The Yemeni nation today has stood up against this aggression as we believe that the true power is with God Almighty.
The Yemeni Nation's trust is with God and the People's Movement. With the honorable people standing by us in the resistance front, God willing, we will defeat the enemy.
In Iran, support for the Palestinian cause came with the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
From the early days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, supporting Palestine has been one of the ideals of Iran to which the nation, the officials, and leader have remained loyal.
Since the parliament represents the people and they demand support for Palestine, we have taken legal action against the slaughter of Palestinians and the destruction of their land, among other steps.
Our stance is completely clear on the unwavering support for the resistance, which is a fundamental policy based on the ideals of the Islamic Revolution, as Iran's leader reiterated today. While resistance groups act independently, Iran will continue to support them.
Of course, standing up against world powers in solidarity with the oppressed comes at a price, which could be lessened if more Muslim nations joined in. And Eid al-Fitr is a great reminder of that responsibility.
For millions of Muslims across the world, Eid al-Fitr presents a fresh start and an opportunity to unite to restore peace and security and Muslim dignity. Mariam Azarcher, Tehran.
Amid relentless Israeli bombardment, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza performed Eid al-Fitr prayers over the rubble of destroyed mosques in displacement shelters and besides the ruins of their homes. The destruction of homes and places of worship has left many Palestinians with nowhere to gather for Eid prayers, further deepening the sense of loss during this sacred time.
This Eid comes at a very depressing time and amid circumstances of death, starvation, and bombing. But the people in Gaza insist on celebrating Eid despite everything, even if it only means performing the Eid prayer.
Reviving the spirit of Eid is an attempt by the people of Gaza to momentarily escape the Israeli resumption of the genocide and the grave humanitarian crisis caused by the ongoing blockade. However, the Israeli occupation insists on staining this day in particular with bloodshed and massacres.
I only came to the Eid prayer to fulfill a religious duty. However, there is no joy or happiness for us. As you can see, the mosque is destroyed, but despite that, they cannot erase our faith from our hearts, and we must pray.
In the 24 hours leading up to the Eid, the Israeli massacre intensified, leaving at least 50 Palestinians killed, the majority of whom were young children playing close to the tents while dressed in minimally available Eid clothing.
This third Eid since the beginning of the genocide concludes with the sounds of the takbirs being mingled with the explosions of the artillery shells falling on the tents and the homes of the people, killing the children and burying their laughter under the rubble of their homes, and making this trip even a wider slaughterhouse. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Here in Al-Mawasi area in western Khan Yunis is one of the few amusement parks across the Gaza Strip, a place that once represented joy and celebratory moments for children and their families who are welcoming Eid after the end of the holy month of Ramadan. This place that was once vibrant with children and their families, the echoing of their laughter as they are riding these games that are now standing idle, surrounded by hundreds of tents that were constructed by the Palestinian families who were forced out of their towns and were forced into endless cycles of displacement for more than a year now. These tents are now overshadowing this scene of having these games and joy for children.
This park used to be a reminder of fun and joyful times for families. For 2 years now, the occupation has stolen our happiness, depriving us of all our special celebrations. It's Eid, a time when we should be baking cookies and decorating our homes, but instead, we are homeless. Happiness has become an impossible wish these days.
This amusement park was filled with green spaces to receive the families in such special occasions. But what really gave this park its joyful aspect is the existence of many of the games, like the Ferris wheel, the pirate ships, the roller coaster, and all our modest games. But today, as the families are welcoming the Eid, these games stand idle. There's no way to power them because the families can barely find and secure their basic humanitarian needs. And now all these games are surrounded by this miserable scenes of tents, of displacement and suffering.
As we welcome Eid, all we wish for is for this genocide to end. For a year, we have been away from our homes, sheltering in a place we never imagined we'd be. We once brought our children here to celebrate and have fun on this special day, but now we can't even get them with new clothes or offer them safety.
For the second year in a row, the Palestinians across the Gaza Strip welcome the festive Eid al-Fitr with nothing but more miseries and suffering. This place that should be filled with the laughters of children is now covered and overshadowed by the miserable scene of displacement that doesn't seem to end any soon for the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Al-Mawasi.
Amid the devastation and despair, the people of Gaza have faced relentless bombardment, starvation, and displacement. Yet through this enduring crisis, one thing has remained unshaken in their collective spirit: their unwavering commitment to their lawful right of resistance.
After nearly 18 months of genocide, the people of Gaza have taken to the streets in an uprising against occupation, mass killings, and starvation, especially in Beit Lahia. The Israeli regime attempts to manipulate and sow division against the resistance is doomed to fail. Our resistance is inseparable from our existence, an undeniable right we will never relinquish.
Despite its advanced weaponry and relentless attempts to crush Gaza's spirit, the Israeli occupation has failed to break the will of the Palestinian people. Its brutal campaigns targeting civilian areas have only laid bare the true barbarity of the regime.
As Palestinians, our heart and soul are with the resistance. Our people remain aware of Israeli conspiracies. What the occupation failed to achieve through military force, it will not accomplish through deceptive plots.
While Israel's genocide continues, a more subtle and insidious attempt is being made, exploiting people's marches against the genocide in Beit Lahia, who erupted calling for the end of the Israeli war.
As the Israeli brutality intensifies, it is clear that the Gaza Strip will continue to be the battleground, not only for physical survival, but for the ideological and cultural soul of the Palestinian people. Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
The Israeli regime launched new airstrikes on several towns and cities across Lebanon on Friday in violation of a ceasefire with the Arab country. After two drone attacks, Israeli rockets targeted the Beirut southern suburbs, destroying two buildings.
As Lebanon marked Al-Quds Day, the Israeli occupation forces continue to pound the country. And for the first time since the ceasefire, Israel struck a residential neighborhood in South Beirut in an act which could jeopardize the already fragile truce.
The sounds of explosions were heard. Ambulances and firefighter trucks ran to the site. Yet the rallies to commemorate Al-Quds Day did not stop. Hezbollah officials stress that despite the Israeli threats and continuous aggression, the resistance in Lebanon will not forsake Al-Quds.
On this blessed day, and in light of the current circumstances, we say that we renew our pledge to Al-Quds. We will not forsake Al-Quds. Together with all the honorable people in the nation, in Palestine and the Arab and Muslim world, and with the free people of the world, we will hold the banner of Al-Quds.
Palestinian activists also stress that Imam Khomeini knew that defeating the arrogant tyrants and achieving victory is only possible if the Muslims and Arabs were united and mobilized for the sake of Al-Quds.
لقد عجز الأعداء جميعاً